enjoying the softness and fine craftsmanship of the garment. I stared at the dark circles under my eyes that told of many sleepless nights. The paleness of my already sallow-looking skin was heavily contrasted by the black clothing, so I pinched my cheeks, giving them some much-needed color. Mother never had to worry about doing such things. Her skin was a beautiful honey, showing off her ancestry from India, and mine was a cream-laden imitation of hers. I reminded myself I need not be fashionable, I was going for stealth, though my aunt would be pleased I'd taken an interest in my appearance. Unbidden, a wretched thought flashed through my mind. Thomas and Uncle were out the evening of the first murder. They were interested in studying the human body. And Thomas had flat out lied about it. If I discovered them doing treacherous things, would they harm me? I laughed, covering my mouth to stifle the sound. What a ridiculous notion. My uncle was not capable of such acts. Thomas, however, I couldn't say for sure, but refused to follow that trail of thought. I imagined the murderer was a physician traveling abroad, or someone who was working for a physician to locate organs for study. Or perhaps some wealthy man or woman was willing to pay dearly for a transplant of some sort. Though that science hadn't been effective yet, no one had ever accomplished a successful organ transplant. Either way, I doubted highly that Leather Apron was hanging around, stalking women of the night. I'd be fine, cloaked under darkness. Without allowing myself a moment's hesitation, I swiftly sneaked down the stairs, crept into the drawing room, and latched myself in. Glancing about the empty room, I released a sigh. All was quiet. I tiptoed across the floor, then opened the window farthest from the door. Placing both hands on the windowsill, I glanced over my shoulder, checking the lock once more. Father was sleeping, and he wasn't quite mad enough to check on me during the night, but the thought of being caught had my heart running double its speed. A thrill twirled through my veins as I pushed off, dropping a few feet to the patch of grass set between stones. The few seconds of weightlessness made me feel as free as a bird soaring in the heavens. I smiled as I wiped my soft leather gloves off and slunk into the shadows surrounding the building. Father would lock me in the old coal cellar if he knew I'd sneaked away so late, which made my night adventure all the more appealing. Let him discover I was out at this indecent hour, and was more than capable of taking care of myself. I welcomed the chance, not only to ferret out helpful clues for our investigation, but to prove Father's fears irrational as well. Even if there was, potentially, a madman on the loose. My quest began losing its appeal the longer I slipped in and out of the dimness of London's abandoned streets. I couldn't take the carriage without Father learning of my shameful activities, and trekking through the cobblestone streets for nearly an hour wasn't as bold and daring as I'd imagined it to be. I was cold, and the streets stank of waste. Needles pricked between my shoulder blades. I had the horrible feeling I was being watched. I nearly fainted when a silly old cat ran into my path. Down the block I heard a commotion and slipped into the closest alleyway to avoid being seen. Voices carried over the rolling fog, adding a haunted feeling to the already eerie streets. I counted my breaths, waiting for the people to pass by, praying no one would slink into my hiding place. Wind tickled the back of my neck, raising goose flesh. I didn't like being trapped between buildings. I hadn't really thought of what I'd say should I encounter someone at this hour. All I'd been thinking was I'd spy on the pubs Miss Nichols had visited prior to her death, possibly learn some new fact or clue from the people deep in their drink, and outsmart Thomas Cresswell. Perhaps I should have prepared myself a bit more, instead of being motivated by the desire to show off my own intelligence to such an obnoxious yet damnably brilliant boy. I glanced up through the light fog at the cross street. Hanbury? How had I gotten this far over? I was nearly to the Princess Alice, but had travelled a touch out of the way. The next few streets should take me to Wentworth and Commercial. Without waiting for the drunken couple to pass, I willed myself to take on the stealth of an apparition, floating soundlessly down the alley and across the road. My feet took sturdy steps. Though a feather could have knocked me over, my heart was pounding so hard. Halfway through the alley, a pebble knocked out of place behind me. I whirled to see nothing. No scythe-wielding murderer or drunken bar patron. Only an empty black space between buildings. Must have been a rat crawling through rubbish. I stood for a few more beats, waiting, my heart thrashing against my ribs like a fish taken from water. I feared a monster would be standing behind me, breathing its rotten breath down my neck should I turn around, so I closed my eyes. Somehow, everything seemed easier to manage when I couldn't see. Though it was a foolish, foolish thing to do. Pretending a monster wasn't there didn't make it go away. It only made one vulnerable to its attack. I listened hard. When no other sounds occurred, I moved swiftly away, tossing glances over my shoulder to be certain I was alone. Once I saw the lively pub in front of me, I took a deep breath. I'd much rather take my chances with drunken ruffians than the shadows stalking the night. The brick building stood 3 stories tall and was prominently placed between 2 streets, giving it a triangular shape in the front. Noise and the clinking clatter of plates and glasses filtered out through the front doors, along with bawdy laughter and words no lady should hear. Sinking my teeth into my lower lip, I eyed some of the more surly patrons in view. I rethought my earlier fear of shadows. Some men were covered in soot, while others had blood splatter along the cuffs of their rolled sleeves. Butchers and factory workers. Their arms were corded with the look of hard labour, and their rough accents spoke of poverty. My fragile aristocratic bones stuck out, even in my plainest dress. I cursed the bustle and finely stitched seams, apparent even in the dark, and contemplated turning back. I refused to be defeated so easily by fear or a well-made garment. Squaring my shoulders, I took one giant step toward the crowd, before being dragged backward by an unseen force. I opened my mouth to scream, but was quickly silenced by a large hand covering the lower half of my face. The grasp wasn't hard, but I couldn't gain enough leeway to bite down on my assailant. I kicked and jerked about to no avail. The only thing I managed to do was to wrap my blasted skirts about my legs, tumbling into my assailant, allowing him a bit more ease in his unholy mission. I was at the mercy of this invisible demon, powerless to break free of its supernatural grasp.
"Please, don't scream. You'll ruin everything."
His voice was far too amused, given the situation. At least he wasn't an apparition, then. I wrestled with everything I had, twisting and knocking my head against his chest. If he wasn't so tall, I might have connected with his head.
"We're going somewhere quiet. Then we can talk, all right?"
I nodded slowly, collecting my racing thoughts. Somehow that voice was familiar. He gently pulled me into the shadows, our bodies pressed together most inappropriately. And even though I thought I recognized his voice, I didn't make his job easy. I'd show him how right my mother was about roses having both petals and thorns. Digging my heels in, I kicked and tried scratching his arms, with little success. We stumbled into the alley, our limbs knocking together, and he oofed as my elbow connected with his stomach. Good. If I died now, at least I'd have some satisfaction of having injured the beast. My momentary victory was short-lived. My bulky skirts weighed down any more attempts at fleeing, and the monstrous fog finally swallowed us whole. Once we were far enough away from the pub and the gas lamps lining the cobbled streets, my attacker released me as promised. My chest heaved with fear and rage. Bracing myself for a fight, I spun on my heel, blinking disbelief away. Thomas Cresswell stood, with his arms crossed at his chest, a slight frown turning down his handsome features. He too was dressed solidly in black, with the addition of a cap pulled low over his brow. His profile cast sharp shadows in the waning light. There was an almost dangerous aura about him, cautioning me away, but anger seethed through my veins. I was going to kill him!
"Are you completely mad? Was that necessary?"
I demanded, both fists planted on my hips to avoid strangling him.
"You could have simply asked me to follow you. And what do you think you're doing, skulking along the streets at this ungodly hour?"
He eyed me warily, then ran a hand down his tired-looking face. If I didn't know any better, I'd think he'd
possibly been worried.
I could ask the same of you, Miss Wadsworth, but I'd rather save that spectacle for your brother.
I didn't have time to finish my sentence before Nathaniel appeared like the ghost of Christmas past, looking less than amused. For once, I was without words. Nathaniel nodded toward Thomas, then grabbed me roughly by my elbow, pulling me deeper into the shadows and out of earshot. I wrenched around, glaring, but Thomas's attention was fixed on the arm Nathaniel was latched onto, the muscle in his jaw clenching. His reaction confounded me enough to go along with my brother peacefully.
"Please spare me any of your ridiculous stories, sister,"
Nathaniel whispered harshly when we were far enough away.
"I don't even want to know why you thought it a fine idea to traipse around darkened streets while a murderer is stalking women. Do you have some sort of death wish?"
I got the impression this was a rhetorical question. I kept quiet by squeezing the material of my skirts between my fingers. What I wanted to do was shake his rough hand off my elbow, where he was still gripping me a bit too hard. I also wanted to scold him for being as overprotective as father and reacting hysterically, but couldn't bring myself to do either of those things. Nathaniel released me, then tugged at his fine leather gloves until his face slowly returned to a more natural color instead of the blazing red of the Queen's Guard. He sighed, running a hand through his fair hair.
"Losing mother was bad enough."
His voice caught, and he coughed the emotion away, yanking his comb out from beneath his overcoat.
"Don't expect me to sit back and watch you recklessly endanger yourself, little sister."
His eyes dared me to say one stupid thing.
"It would destroy me. Understand?"
As quickly as my temper flared, my ire was quelled. For the last 5 years, it was the two of us against the world. Father was too lost in sorrow to really be present. Putting myself in Nathaniel's place, I could see the minute cracks of my emotions shattering, should I ever lose him. "I'm sorry for worrying you, Nathaniel. Truly." I meant every word of the apology. Then a thought struck. I narrowed my eyes. "Why, might I ask, are you trolling around back alleyways with that devil, Mr. Cresswell?"
"If you must know,"
Nathaniel said a bit haughtily, adjusting his collar,
"we're not the only ones out here."
Now this had my full attention. I raised a brow, waiting while my brother scanned the abandoned area around us.
"A group of us are doing a bit of our own inquiry. We've taken up posts throughout Whitechapel and are looking for suspicious persons. We're calling ourselves the Knights of Whitechapel."
I blinked. The only people who looked sorely out of place were my well-dressed brother and his ridiculous hat-wearing lackey. I could only imagine what the rest of the high-born boys looked like in this neighborhood. "The Knights of Whitechapel?" I repeated. My brother wasn't capable of hurting a common house fly. I hated imagining what some diabolical killer might do to him out here in the dark.
"You cannot be serious, Nathaniel. What would you possibly do if you came face to face with this murderer? Offer him a silver comb, or perhaps some French wine?"
A dark look crossed my brother's face. "You'd be surprised what I'd manage, should the need arise." Nathaniel gritted his teeth. "He'd soon discover he's not the only one who can induce fear."
"Now then."
He angled me back down the alleyway toward the lone figure standing near the end.
"Mr. Cresswell will see that you make it home safely."
The last thing I wanted was to be escorted home by Mr. Thomas Cresswell. He was quite smug enough.
"If you're staying out here, then so am I."
I planted my feet, refusing to budge, but Nathaniel simply dragged me behind him as if I were made of feathers.
"No, you're not."
He handed me off to my classmate.
"Take the carriage to my house, Thomas. I'll come back on foot later."
If Thomas was annoyed with Nathaniel bossing him around like a common servant, he didn't show it. He simply wrapped his long fingers around my arm, tethering me to his side. I hated the surge of my pulse at his touch, but no longer struggled to break free. I stole a glance, noticing the smirk on his face. He didn't grip me as if I were an unruly child in need of scolding, choosing instead to hold me back from Nathaniel, as if he were the one in need of rescuing. It was high time someone noticed I was capable of looking after myself. even if that someone was an infuriating boy. An intelligent, arrogant, handsome boy. I stood a little straighter, and Thomas chuckled, a delicious, rumbling sound I wouldn't mind hearing again. My brother spared me one last look.
"Be sure to place a stick atop that window sill in the drawing room."
He smiled broadly at the death glare I leveled at him.
"Sorry, little sister, but I do believe you've had enough excitement for one evening. Count your blessings you encountered only the two of us out here, and not someone more sinister."
"Come," Thomas said, directing me toward the carriage. "Your brother's right. Something wicked lurks in these shadows."
I twisted around to stare at him.
"Something more wicked than you?"
Thomas opened his mouth before catching on to my teasing, then laughed in a way that set my heart racing again. Perhaps he was the most dangerous thing I could encounter out here, and my brother hadn't a clue. One fact was slowly taking shape. I was in jeopardy of admiring Mr. Cresswell against my better judgment. A gust of wind tangled my hair, bringing with it a chill that caressed my skin. I glanced around for my brother, but he'd already been taken by the fog.
Chapter 5. Dark and Hideous Things. Wadsworth Residence, Belgrave Square, 8th September 1888.
"You're looking rather unwell this morning."
Father glanced at me over his paper.
"Perhaps you ought to return to bed. I'll send up some broth. Last thing we need is to have you coming down with an influenza, or worse. Especially as winter draws near."
He set the paper down and wiped his brow with a handkerchief. Out of our family members, Father was the only one who appeared unwell. He'd been perspiring a lot lately.
Are you feeling all right, Father? You look a bit..."
"How I look is not your concern,"
he snapped, then quickly amended.
"You needn't worry about my health, Audrey Rose. Attend to yourself. I should like it very much if you didn't leave the house again for some time. I've heard more disease is spreading in the slums."
After adding a few drops of tonic to his tea, he continued reading the news. I wanted to point out that gaining an immunity to certain things would keep me healthier, and the only way to gain such immunity was by leaving the house. But he'd never tolerated my knowledge of science or medicine. Keeping me in a bubble equaled safety to him, no matter how wrong that notion was. He sipped from his tea, his presence filling the room but not warming it. My attention drifted to the clock. I needed to meet with Uncle soon. Nathaniel was still sleeping, so I was on my own for leaving the house. I politely cleared my throat.
"I'm in need of some new dresses and shoes."
I dropped my gaze, peering up through my lashes, feigning embarrassment.
"And other more delicate items."
Father waved me off, thoughts of corsets and undergarments too much for him to hear about, despite his fears of my poor health. He blotted at his nose with the same handkerchief, then returned it to his pocket.
"Do what you must," he said, "but be home in time for supper and your lesson on running a proper household. Your aunt says you showed little improvement last time she visited."
I fought the urge to roll my eyes at his predictability.
"Yes, Father."
"Oh," he said, wiping his brow once more. "Wear a mask when you leave today. There's talk of more East End sickness."
I nodded.
The mask was nothing more than a cotton neckerchief I tied about my nose and mouth. I doubted it would protect me from anything.
Satisfied with my obedience, he went back to reading, the sound of his teacup hitting the saucer, his sniffling, and the flipping of pages, our only talkative companions.
"Ghastly Murder in Whitechapel."
I read the headline aloud to my uncle while he paced in front of the specimen jars in his basement laboratory. The deep burgundy wallpaper was normally a warm backdrop against the frigid temperature and even colder bodies adorning the examination table most days. Today, however, the red tones reminded me of spilled blood, and I'd had my fill of that substance lately. I rubbed my hands over the thin sleeves of my muslin day dress and scanned the article. There was no mention of the new body they'd found this morning. It was still detailing poor Miss Nichols's death. The killer had taken mercy on her, compared to the nefarious acts he'd committed on victim number two. I watched Uncle absently twist his moustache while doing his best to carve a path in the carpet. If he kept walking back and forth, I feared he'd wear through the wooden floorboards soon enough.
Why position the body in such a manner?
It was the same question he'd been asking himself since arriving from the latest murder over 2 hours ago. I had no theories to offer him. I was still trying to divorce myself from the abhorrent diagram he'd sketched on the chalkboard earlier. My attention drifted to the disfigured image he'd created, drawn against my will like a magnet to the unimaginable gore. I studied the words scrawled above the detailed drawing. Miss Annie Chapman, aged 47, approximately 5 feet tall, blue eyes, shoulder-length dark brown wavy hair, an entire life distilled into 5 basic physical descriptions. She'd been murdered on Hanbury Street, the very street I'd found myself on late last night. A chill worked its way deep into my bones, settling between my vertebrae like pigeons roosting on a clothesline. Mere hours separated her untimely end and my dance with danger. Was it possible I'd been so close to the murderer? Nathaniel was right to be worried. I'd practically run into Leather Apron's all-too-eager arms by sneaking around like a child during the witching hour. Should anything happen to me, Father would lose what was left of his mind, locking himself away in that study until he finally died of a broken heart.
What of tossing her intestines about her shoulder?
Uncle paused before the diagram, staring past it at a memory not captured on the board.
Was it a message for the inspectors, or the easiest way to get what organ he sought?
Perhaps, I offered. Uncle turned to me, astonished, as if he'd forgotten I was there. He shook his head.
Lord knows why I allow you to learn such unseemly things for a girl.
On occasion, Uncle would mutter such annoyances. I'd learned to ignore them for the most part, knowing he'd forget his hesitations quickly enough. Because you love me? Uncle sighed.
Yes. And a brain such as yours shouldn't be wasted on frippery and gossip, I suppose.
My focus found the drawing again. The woman who'd taken my measurements earlier resembled the deceased woman's description nearly perfectly. Keeping up the pretense of my whereabouts for Father, I'd stopped by the dressmaker's shop on the way in, picking out rich fabrics and new styles to be sent to the house. I'd decided on a walking dress made of deep navy, with gold and cream stripes. The bustle was smaller than my others, and the hefty material would be perfect for the cooler weather. My absolute favorite was a tea gown I'd chosen to wear when receiving visitors. It was the color of sponge sugar, with tiny roses embroidered along its front. A soft pink robe completed the loose-fitting gown, cascading to the floor. Honestly, I couldn't wait for them to be ready. Just because I studied cadavers didn't mean I couldn't appreciate beautiful garments. My thoughts returned to the matter at hand. Had the seamstress not been reputably employed, she very well could have ended up on the streets, and eventually in Uncle's laboratory too. Another cold corpse to slice into. I crossed the room to where a tiny table stood nestled in the corner. A maid had brought in a tray of tea and a platter of scones with raspberry jam. I poured myself a cup of Earl Grey, adding a sugar cube with ornate silver tongs. The very opulence juxtaposed to our new case was nauseating. I prepared a second cup for Uncle, leaving the scones untouched. The sanguine color of the preserves was revolting. I feared I'd never be hungry again. Uncle jerked himself out of his next reverie when I handed him the steaming cup. The sweet herbal scent mixed with bergamot transfixed his attention for a few precious beats before he continued mumbling and pacing.
Where is that blasted boy?
He checked the brass, anatomically correct, heart clock mounted on the wall, frustration knotting his brow. It was hard to tell if he was more annoyed by the timepiece itself or by Mr. Thomas Cresswell. The clock was a gift from my father, a long-ago kindness he'd shown Uncle upon completing his medical degree. Father used to craft toys and clocks before Mother died, another joy her death had stolen from him. Whereas I shunned religion for its abandonment, Father shunned his brother and science for their failure to save Mother. When she died, Father claimed Uncle hadn't tried hard enough.
Conversely, Uncle thought Father relied too heavily on a miracle he couldn't offer, and was a fool to blame him for Mother's death.
I couldn't imagine ever hating my brother that much, and pitied them both for their animosity. I shifted my focus to the time. Thomas had left over an hour earlier, inquiring after the members of his vigilante group. Uncle hoped one of them might have seen something suspicious because they were posted, like boys playing medieval knights, throughout Whitechapel until 4 in the morning. Personally, I wondered why Thomas wouldn't already know if they'd come across something. That was the whole point of their little group. When another half hour ticked by and Mr. Cresswell still hadn't returned, Uncle was practically mad with unrest. It seemed even the corpses and dead things surrounding us held their collective breaths, not wanting to wake the sleeping darkness from within him. I loved and respected Uncle, but his passion often towed the line of madness when he was under pressure. 10 minutes later, the door creaked open, revealing Thomas's tall, silhouetted form. Uncle practically vaulted across the laboratory, a rabid hunger for knowledge in his eyes. I swear if I had looked closely enough, I'd have seen white foam collecting at the corners of his mouth. When he got like this, it was easy to see why some people thought him odd, my brother included.
"Well then, what news have you? Who knows what?"
A servant removed Thomas's long overcoat and hat before disappearing up the narrow staircase. Those uninterested in forensic studies never liked lingering down here for long. Too many dark and hideous things lurked in glass jars and on stone slabs. Thomas eyed the drawing on the board before answering, purposefully not looking in Uncle's direction.
"No one saw or heard a thing out of the ordinary, I'm afraid."
I narrowed my eyes. Thomas didn't sound very upset by this news.
"However," he added, "I tagged along with the inspectors while they made some inquiries, paltry as they might be. This one jester pelted me with questions regarding your work, but I didn't offer much. Said he might call on you later this evening."
He shook his head.
"Screws and gears were discarded near the body, and a few witnesses have stepped forth."
Uncle inhaled sharply.
"And?" "Unfortunately, the best description we received came from a woman who saw only a man from behind. She stated that the two of them were speaking, but she couldn't make out more than the deceased agreeing to something. As she was a prostitute, I'm sure you can fill in the lurid details."
"Thomas!"
Uncle shot a glance in my direction. Only then did my classmate acknowledge me standing in the room.
"There's a young lady present."
I rolled my eyes. Leave it to Uncle Jonathan to worry about prostitution being too much for my feminine persuasion, yet think nothing of me seeing a body spliced open before I'd even had my luncheon.
"Sincere apologies, Miss Wadsworth. I hadn't seen you there."
Thomas was nothing but a filthy liar. He cocked his head, a sly smile tugging at the corners of his lips as if he were privy to my thoughts.
"I did not mean to offend you."
"I am hardly offended, Mr. Cresswell."
I gave him a pointed look. "On the contrary, I am highly perturbed we're even discussing such fatuous things when another woman has been slain so brutally." I ticked off each injury on my fingers, accentuating my point.
"Gutted, with her innards tossed over a shoulder, posed with her legs up, knees facing outward. Not to mention her missing reproductive organs."
"Yes," Thomas agreed, nodding. "That was rather unpleasant, now that you mention it."
"You speak as if you've witnessed it firsthand, Mr. Cresswell."
"Perhaps I have."
"Thomas, please," Uncle scolded. "Do not goad her."
I turned my annoyance on Uncle.
"By all means, let's continue wasting time speaking of my potential discomfort at her occasional profession. What is your issue with prostitutes anyhow? It's not her fault society is so unjust to women."
"I..."
Uncle Jonathan stepped back, placing a palm to his forehead as if he might be able to rub my tirade out with a few soothing strokes. Thomas had the gall to wink at me over the cup of tea he'd poured himself.
"Very well."
He raised an exaggerated eyebrow at Uncle.
"The young lady has made her case, Doctor. From this point forward, I shall pretend she's as capable as a man."
I glared harder.
"Pretend I am as capable as a man? Please, sir, do not value me so little."
"Also,"
he continued before I exploded, setting his teacup down on its matching blue and white Staffordshire saucer,
As we're now treating each other like equals and peers, I insist on you calling me Thomas or Cresswell. Silly formalities needn't apply to equals such as we.
He grinned at me in a way that could be considered a flirtation. Not to be outdone, I lifted my chin. If that's what you want, then, you're permitted to call me Audrey Rose. Or Wadsworth. Uncle stared up at the ceiling, Rose, sighing heavily.
Back to our murder, then,
he said, removing spectacles from a leather satchel and securing them on his face.
What else have either of you got for me, besides the promise of a splitting headache?
I have a new theory on why this act was more violent than the last, I said slowly, a new puzzle piece slipping into place in my mind. It occurred to me the scenes appear to be tainted with revenge. For once I held their attention, as if I were a corpse with secrets to divulge. During our lesson, you said first-time killers most likely start by murdering those they know. Uncle nodded. Well, what if the murderer knew Miss Nichols and couldn't really let himself go as wild as he'd hoped? It's as if he wanted to exact revenge, but couldn't bring himself to do it once it came down to it. Miss Nichols was not as viciously mutilated as Miss Annie Chapman had been, leading me to believe Miss Chapman was unknown to our murderer.
Interesting theory, niece.
Uncle absently stroked his moustache.
Perhaps Miss Nichols was murdered by her husband or the man she was living with.
Thomas took up my uncle's favourite habit of pacing in a wide circle around the room. With each movement he made, the scent of formalin and bergamot wafted through the air, creating a strange aroma that was both unsettling and comforting.
Why is he taking their organs, though?
He muttered to himself. I watched silently as the gears twisted and ground their way through the maze of his brain. He was fascinating to study, no matter how much I pretended to detest that fact. As if a light had illuminated the dark, he snapped his fingers.
He has a deep hatred for women, for what they represent to him, or something from his past. Somewhere along the line, a woman disappointed him greatly.
Why attack prostitutes? I asked, ignoring Uncle as he cringed at my improper word choice.
First, they're easy, opportunity-wise. They also follow men into dark places eagerly.
Thomas walked closer, his attention landing on me for the briefest moment before moving on to the cadaver.
Maybe he fears the threat they pose? Or perhaps he's some sort of religious zealot, ridding the world of whores and harlots?
Uncle slammed his hands down on the table, causing a specimen jar to slosh onto the wooden surface.
That's enough! It's improper enough to be teaching Audrey Rose such things. We needn't use vulgarity in the process.
I sighed. I'd never understand the way a man's mind worked. My gender didn't handicap me, yet I was blessed that Uncle was modern enough to allow my apprenticeship with him, and so I would tolerate these minimal annoyances.
I apologize, sir, Thomas cleared his throat, but I believe if your niece can handle dissecting a human, she can handle intelligent conversation without fainting. Her intellect, though nowhere near as vast as mine, may prove useful.
Thomas cleared his throat again, preparing himself for Uncle's backlash. But my uncle quietly relented. I couldn't help staring, open-mouthed at him. He'd actually defended me, in that annoying roundabout way of his, but still. Seemed I wasn't the only one experiencing growing respect.
Very well. Do go on.
Thomas glanced at me, then took a deep breath.
He loathes these creatures of the night. Loathes they're alive, selling themselves. I wager the one he loves, or loved, has likely left him. Perhaps he feels betrayed in a way.
Thomas picked his tea back up, taking a careful sip before setting it down again.
I wouldn't be surprised if his wife or betrothed committed suicide, the ultimate act of leaving him.
Uncle, returning quickly to his scientific mindset, nodded.
He also feels he's entitled to take what he wants, literally. He paid for it, after all. In his eyes, he's telling these women exactly what he's after, therefore they're willing participants in his
murders. A sick feeling tied bows in my stomach. Someone was running about the streets, tricking women into agreeing to be butchered. Is it possible he's living out a fantasy? I asked, thinking aloud. Perhaps he's trying to play God.
Thomas almost fell over from stopping so short. He twisted on his heel and crossed the room in a few short strides. Clutching my elbows, he kissed my cheek, rendering me both speechless and scarlet. My focus shot to my uncle as I touched my cheek, but he said nothing of this inappropriate behavior. His mind was latched on to murder.
"You're brilliant, Audrey Rose," Thomas said, eyes glittering with admiration.
He held my gaze a moment too long to be polite.
"That's got to be it. We're dealing with someone who thinks himself a god of sorts." "Well done, both of you."
Uncle's eyes shone with renewed hope and near certainty.
"We've secured a possible motive."
"Which is what?" I asked,
not fully following the motive they were talking about.
I was having difficulty thinking of anything other than Thomas's lips on my cheek and the grotesqueness of our conversation. Uncle inhaled deeply.
"Our murderer is using his religious views to determine these women's fate. I would be unsurprised if he was some closet crusader, or perhaps he's a failed clergyman, killing in the name of God."
A new realization sat heavy upon my breast, which means there could be more victims, and a lot more blood before this was through. Uncle shared a haunted look with Thomas, then me. Words needn't be said. Scotland Yard would laugh us into the asylum if we went to them with this theory. And who would blame them? What would we say? A mad priest, or clergyman, is on the loose, killing because God ordained it, and all of London won't be safe until we find a way to stop him? My uncle was famous, but people still gossiped behind his back. It wouldn't take much for him to be seen as a man driven to murder from picking apart the dead like a carrion scavenger. People would cross themselves and say a prayer he lived out his days peacefully in a faraway place, preferably in solitary confinement. Thomas and I wouldn't fare much better in the vote of public opinion. Our work was considered a desecration of the dead.
"It's essential we tell no one of this," Uncle said at last, removing his spectacles and pinching the bridge of his nose. "Not Nathaniel, nor friends or classmates. At least, not until we can prove ourselves to the police. For now, I want you both to scour the evidence we've collected. There has to be some clue we're missing. Anything at all we can use to identify the perpetrator before he strikes again."
The murderer truly must be a madman, if he thought what he was doing was helpful or righteous. And that thought was more terrifying than any other. A knock came at the thick wooden door, followed by a servant bobbing a quick curtsy at my uncle. "Mr. Nathaniel Wadsworth is in the parlour, sir. Says it's urgent he see his sister straight away."
Chapter 6. Den of Sin. Dr. Jonathan Wadsworth's Parlour, Highgate, 8th September, 1888. Nathaniel was pale as a corpse when I rushed into Uncle's stuffy parlour. The dark greens and blue swirls of the wallpaper were meant to inspire a sense of tranquility, but did little to calm my brother. Sweat trickled down his brow, staining a ring around the starched collar of his shirt. His hair was as wild as his eyes. Severe dark circles marred his normally flawless complexion. My brother hadn't slept all night, it seemed, but the sorry state of his hair worried me the most. I gathered my skirts and collided with him halfway across the room, ignoring the way the boning on my corset dug painfully into my ribs. He wrapped me into an uncomfortably tight embrace, tucking his chin to my neck and breathing deeply.
"You're all right," he whispered, half mad. "Thank the heavens you're all right."
I pulled back slightly, peering into his eyes. "Of course, I am, Nathaniel. Why would you assume I wasn't?"
"Forgive me, sister. I just learned of the second murder and where it occurred. I knew the victim wasn't you, but couldn't shake the sense of foreboding gripping my heart."
He swallowed hard.
"Imagine my worry. You haven't the best history when it comes to sound judgment. I feared you'd been lured away someplace dreadful. The day has already been unkind to our family. I couldn't help fearing the worst."
"Why wouldn't you think of finding me here sooner?" I asked,
clutching the last unraveling thread of my patience. How infuriating having to deal with such doubt all the time. If I were a man, Nathaniel certainly wouldn't be treating me as if I were incapable of looking after myself. You know I spend most of my time with Uncle. Surely you can't have been running aimlessly around the streets all afternoon. And what has the day done to our family that's so horrid? Nathaniel's features twisted with anger.
Why indeed would I be flustered? Perhaps because my sister cannot bother to remain indoors like a normal, decent girl.
At first his words stole the breath from me. Why must I either be docile and decent, or curious and wretched? I was a decent girl, even if I spent my spare time reading about science theories and dissecting the dead. I drew myself up, sticking my finger in his chest. Why in heaven's name would I leave a note Father could find? You know how he'd react to discovering my lies. Have you gone completely mad, or is this just a temporary spell of insanity? I didn't allow him a moment to respond. Thank goodness it seems to affect Wadsworths born of only the superior gender. My lowly womanhood shall save me from you brutes yet. Now what is this nonsense about the day? Has it anything to do with Father? The fight drained from my brother as swiftly as it had come. He stepped back, rubbing the tension from his temples.
I don't know where to begin.
Suddenly the floor was vastly intriguing to him. He stared at it, refusing to meet my eyes.
Father will be away for a few weeks.
Is he all right? I touched his elbow. Nathaniel, please, look at me. Nathaniel stood straighter, meeting my worried gaze.
A superintendent called on our house this morning. Now, Audrey Rose, what I'm about to tell you is quite disturbing. Steady yourself.
I rolled my eyes. I assure you I'm more than capable of hearing whatever you've come to say, brother. The only thing that might kill me is the unwarranted suspense. Someone snorted from the doorway, and Nathaniel and I both snapped our attention to the unwelcome intruder. Thomas. He covered his mouth, but didn't bother hiding the fact he was shaking with laughter.
Do go on, he managed between bouts of chuckling. Pretend I'm not here if you must. This ought to be good.
Must you intrude on other people's conversations? I said, sounding snappish even to my own ears. Have you nothing better to do? Or do you simply excel at being arrogant and unlikable in every manner? Thomas's smile didn't falter, but there was a noticeable shift as amusement left his eyes. I wished to crawl into the nearest grave and hide. Thomas, I do apologize. That was...
Your uncle asked that I check on the racket coming from this room. He wanted to make sure you weren't murdering each other on his favorite oceanic carpet.
Thomas paused, adjusting his cuffs, his tone now cold and remote as the Arctic tundra.
I assure you, young miss, I'd rather have my nails ripped from their beds, one by one, this very moment, than remain here, unwanted, a breath longer.
His attention flicked to Nathaniel.
Tell her about your father's dance with Scotland Yard this morning. I promise you, she's most equipped to handle it.
Without another word, Thomas inclined his head, then stalked from the room. It was clear I'd hurt him, but I hadn't the time to dwell on it. I swung around, facing Nathaniel. What does this have to do with Father? My brother walked to the settee and sat.
Apparently, sometime after breakfast, Father went into Whitechapel. Detective inspectors were scouring the neighborhood, what with the murders and all, and found him in a certain establishment unbefitting to his title.
Nathaniel swallowed.
He's lucky the man who discovered him knew who he was. The superintendent escorted Father home, suggesting he leave the city for a few weeks, or at least until he gets his affairs in order.
I closed my eyes, my imagination running away with astounding leaps. There were only a few different establishments in the East End. Pubs, brothels, and opium dens. Somehow I found myself collapsing onto the little couch next to Nathaniel. Father took laudanum, an opium tincture, every day since Mother's death. The doctor assured us it would cure him of his insomnia and other ailments, but it appeared to be having the opposite effect. Images of him mopping his brow, walking the halls at night, and his growing paranoia flashed through my mind. I couldn't believe I hadn't associated Father's souring moods and behavior with the abuse of his precious tonic. I picked at stray threads on my skirts. How is Father?
To be quite honest, he wasn't in any condition to discuss anything when I left,
Nathaniel said, shifting uncomfortably.
The superintendent is taking Father to the cottage in my stead.
I nodded. Our cottage was a sprawling country estate in Bath named Thornbriar. It was beautiful and extravagant, like most things Lord Wadsworth had inherited. It was the perfect place to recover one's sensibility.
He's been very discreet and helpful, the superintendent,
Nathaniel added. I clamped my mouth shut. Father probably paid this policeman for his silence in the past, and his kindness was a result of hoping for more monetary gain.
Is there anything you need me to do?
Nathaniel shook his head.
Superintendent Blackburn, I believe his name is, was getting Father's things together with the new valet, and said I should focus on finding you. They set off about an hour ago.
I stared at my brother for a beat. Father had already left. No matter how hard he made life at home, I couldn't stop myself from worrying after him. I took a deep breath. Dwelling on things out of my control, when there were murders to solve and bodies to be studied, was a luxury I could ill afford. "Will you be all right without me for a little while?" I asked, standing and brushing down the front of my bodice. "I really must get back to assisting Uncle, if there's nothing to be done at home." Nathaniel's focus drifted toward the door leading to the laboratory. God only knew what was running through his mind. According to my brother, Uncle was one case away from crossing into the darkness he so loved studying. Instead of instigating another argument, I clutched his hands in mine and smiled. He softened a bit, and my smile grew. Aunt Amelia's lessons on how to persuade the opposite gender came in handy after all. I'd need to attempt even better tactics with Thomas if I hoped to repair his bruised feelings.
I'll be home in time for a late dinner. We can discuss a treatment plan for Father then.
I stood back, letting a bit of humor creep into my voice. Besides, you really should address the matter of your hair, brother. You're a wreck. Nathaniel looked torn between laughing, demanding I return home with him, and allowing me the freedom he knew I so strongly desired. Finally, his shoulders slumped.
I shall send the carriage back at precisely 7 o'clock. No arguments. While Father's gone, I'm in charge. Until Aunt Amelia arrives, that is.
Despite everything going on, this was rather pleasant news. I could handle Aunt Amelia and all her etiquette lessons. Her mornings were filled with visits to the shops, afternoons with teas and gossip, and she retired early enough, claiming her need of beauty rest, but I knew she truly enjoyed a few spirits before bed. She'd be coming and going more than I was. Freedom would be a blissful thing. Somehow, in the midst of Father's addiction, a career murderer, mutilated women, and buckets of blood, I managed a small smile.
You're pleased your father will be gone.
Thomas wasn't asking, merely telling me how I felt with more confidence than anyone had the right to possess. Ignoring him, I scanned the notes my uncle had scratched down at each crime scene. Something had to stand out. If I could find that one connection before Uncle returned from Scotland Yard.
You've had quite a poor relationship with him. Probably for a few years.
He paused, dropping his attention to where I twisted my mother's ring. It was a pear-shaped diamond, her birthstone, and one of the few possessions of hers Father actually allowed me to keep. Or, I should say, one of the few items he could part with. Father had a sentimental heart. Growing up, I'd always wished my birthday was in April too. Diamonds were everything I hoped to be. Beautiful, yet containing unimaginable strength. Somehow I was more of a Herkimer diamond, similar in appearance to the real thing, but not quite authentic. A sad smile tugged at Thomas's mouth.
Ah, I see. You haven't been on good terms since the death of your mother.
His smile faded, his voice growing quiet.
Tell me, was it difficult for you? Did he beg your uncle to fix her with science?
I stood so abruptly my chair fell to the ground with a clatter that would awaken the dead, had there been any in the laboratory. Do not speak about things you know nothing of! I balled my fists to keep from thrashing out at him. His mask of indifference fell away, revealing honest regret. After a few breaths, I calmly asked, How did you come to know these intimate details of my life? Have you been asking my uncle about it, purposely to hurt me?
It seems you must realize how much... Thomas shook his head. Hurting you wasn't my intent. I apologize, Miss Wadsworth. I thought perhaps I could...
He shrugged and fell silent, leaving me to wonder what he thought he could do by bringing up such a terrible subject. I inhaled deeply, curiosity getting the better of my anger. All right, I'll forgive you this once. I raised a finger at the look of hope blossoming in his features. Only if you tell me, truthfully, how you knew that.
I believe I can manage that. It was quite easy.
He pulled his chair around the table, towing the line of what polite society deemed decent.
You simply need to hone your powers of deduction, Wadsworth. Look at the obvious and go from there. Most people ignore what's right before their eyes. They believe they see, but oftentimes only view what they want, which is precisely how you missed your father's opium addiction for so long.
He patted the front of his jacket and pants pockets, knitting his brow when his search returned no results.
It boils down to mathematical equations and formulas. If the evidence is E and the question is Q, then what equals A to get to your answer? Simply look at what's before you and add it up.
I drew my brows together. You're saying you figured all that out by simply watching me? Excuse me if I find that extremely hard to believe. You can't apply mathematical formulas to people, Cresswell. There's no equation for human emotion. There are too many variables.
True, I've no formula I can work out for certain emotions I feel around you.
That lively spark was back in his countenance. Leaning away, he folded his arms across his chest and grinned at my deep blush.
However, upstairs, when your brother said your father would be gone, you smiled, then immediately frowned, causing one to believe you were covering up your elation at being left alone for a few weeks. You didn't want to seem an insensitive monster, especially since your poor father is unwell.
How did you see that? I asked, eyes narrowed. You'd already left the room. Thomas didn't reveal the answer to that question, but a flicker of amusement was there and gone, so I knew he'd heard me. Spying scoundrel.
Now, when I mentioned your poor relationship, he continued, your eyes darted to that ring you were absently turning round your finger. Judging from the style and fit, I deduced it was not originally your ring.
He paused again, rechecking his suit pockets. I hadn't the faintest idea what he was looking for, but his agitation was growing. He shook his hands out.
Whose ring was it, one might ask? Considering the somewhat old-fashioned style, it's not hard to believe it belonged to someone old enough to be your mother, he said. Since you sneak about in the late-night hours and spend time in this laboratory, coming to the conclusion your mother is no longer living and your father doesn't know your whereabouts wasn't hard.
Thomas bit his lip, seeming lost for how to continue. Now I understood the way his mind worked. Cool detachment was a switch he flipped while working out problems. I braced myself for something unpleasant and waved him on. Go on, out with it. He studied my face, gauging my sincerity.
What kind of father doesn't know where his daughter is? One who doesn't have the best relationship with said daughter because... He's likely too consumed by his own grief or addiction to really care.
Thomas sat forward, intrigue and possibly even esteem lighting his gaze.
How might a young woman such as yourself become obsessed with the macabre? By bearing witness to a scientific act of desperation meant to save a life. Where would you come into contact with that, I wonder?
He purposely glanced around the room, driving his point home.
See? All the answers I sought were plainly visible.
I didn't know until now your uncle was involved with your mother's.
He trailed off, realizing he was straying close to a sensitive subject.
Anyway, you simply need to know where to look for the questions. An easy mathematical formula applied to Homo sapiens. And behold, science reigns over nature once more. No emotions needed.
Except you're wrong, I whispered, shaken by the level of his accuracy. Without humans and nature, there's no such thing as science.
That's not exactly what I mean, Wadsworth. What I'm talking about is trying to solve a riddle or crime. Emotions play no role there. They're too messy and complicated.
He leaned on his elbows, staring into my eyes.
But they're good in other situations, I suppose. For instance, I have not yet figured out the formula for love or romance. Perhaps I shall learn one day soon.
I gasped. Would you talk this indecently if my uncle were present?
Ah, there you are,
he said, picking up a journal and ignoring my last question. I lifted my chair from the ground before reading through my uncle's notes again. Or pretended to, at least. I stared at Thomas until my eyes crossed, trying to force some clue to rise to the surface about him or his family. The only thing I could deduce was that he was unabashedly bold, his comments bordering on impropriety. Without lifting his head from his own journal, he said,
"Not having any luck figuring me out, then? Don't worry, you'll get better with practice. And yes,"
he grinned wickedly, eyes fixed on his paper,
"you'll still fancy me tomorrow, no matter how much you wish otherwise. I'm unpredictable, and you adore it, just as I cannot wrap my massive brain around the equation of you, and yet adore it."
Every retort I was thinking fell from my thoughts. As if sensing the shift in the room, he glanced up. If I expected Thomas to feel ashamed by his forwardness, I'd be cursedly wrong again. Brow quirked. His look held a dare. I wasn't the sort of girl who backed down, so I kept my gaze locked on his, issuing my own challenge. Two could play his game of flirtation.
Are you quite through being a detective, then?
He finally asked, pointing to a passage in Uncle's journal dated nearly 4 months prior to the first murder.
I think I've found something of great note.
My skin prickled with our proximity, but I refused to move away as I leaned over and read. The victim, Emma Elizabeth Smith, was assaulted by two or possibly three attackers, according to her own testimony in the early morning hours of 3rd April 1888. She either didn't see or, as authorities believed, purposely refused to identify the perpetrators responsible for the horrific act committed on her person. An object rammed inside her body proved to be the cause of death one day later, as it ruptured her peritoneum. I swallowed bitter bile down as quickly as it rose in my throat. The 3rd of April was my mother's birthday. How horrid something so despicable could happen on such a joyous day. A peritoneum, if memory served me correctly, was the abdominal wall. I had no idea why Thomas thought this was related when, clearly, this was an act committed by some other savage wandering the London streets. This murder occurred in April, and our leather apron had only just begun his rampage in August. Before I gave him a proper tongue-lashing, he pointed to the most monstrous part of all. Yes, I found that rather disturbing the first time around, Cresswell. No need to revisit the horror again, unless you're deriving sick pleasure from watching me nearly vomit. I couldn't stop the venom from injecting itself in my tone.
Take your emotions out of the equation, Wadsworth. Having a heart that gets distracted by such frivolous things won't aid you in this investigation,
Thomas said softly, reaching across the short distance separating us, as if he longed to touch my hands and remembered his place.
Look at it as if it were simply a puzzle piece with a very unique, albeit gruesome, shape.
I wanted to argue that emotions were not frivolous things,
but my interest was piqued by his detachment during investigations. If his method worked,